for WKU Public Radio and NPR One. I'm Lamont Jack Pearlie, and this is the African American Folklorist. Arnold Schultz, an African American fiddler and guitarist, was the son of a former slave who was born into a family of touring musicians. Arnold has made a significant contribution to the history and music of this region. The American songster Don Flemons joins me to share with us Arnold's story. What's happening, blues people? Today, I'm speaking to a good buddy of mine, a great musician and a folklorist. I would say an ethnomusicologist as well. Would that be correct, Brother Dom?
I think that could work out. I think I've gotten there now.
I hear that. Okay, so, well, today, I want to talk to you about something, because we have these conversations about different people who are at the forefront of the origins of our traditional musics. And I want to talk today about, and you know I don't like this term, obscure, but I would use it in this sense that a lot of people aren't aware of the significant contributions of Arnold Schultz. Please talk to us about this character.
Well, of course. Arnold Schultz, he was an African-American man who was an itinerant musician and a coal miner from Morgantown, Kentucky. And his big claim to fame, because he didn't make recordings, is that he had a significant influence on a young man by the name of Bill Monroe, who would later go on to become the father of bluegrass music as we know it. And that's sort of the basic story there for Arnold Schultz. And over time, a legend around this man has grown. And the more that we find information about his musical legacy, we find that his musical influences dips into other parts of country music beyond just bluegrass. And so that's sort of the basic, is that he's a fellow that, like many African-American musicians, exchanged music with white musicians on a friendly basis. And over time, the white musician ended up becoming very popular. They innovated their own particular styles, but it was all rooted within that early African-American music.
So correct me if I'm wrong. He was a fiddler and a guitarist, and he thumb-picked.
That's correct. See, now, there are a couple of different stories about how he played guitar. There are a few stories that he picked it with his thumb and forefinger, but there are also stories that he played with a flat pick. And that's sort of where we get into an area where it's very unclear exactly what style of guitar playing Arnold Schultz played for any given type of music. Because the facts that we have found is that no matter what type of music he was playing, he was such a versatile musician that he was the type that could pick up a number just by one listen. And he was also said to be one of the very first people to incorporate lead guitar into the string band context for the region. So that's also another innovation, that with the style of picking that he was doing, he was incorporating a lead guitar style that was amazing people so much that they even said that after Arnold Schultz would be in town, they'd hear other musicians and it would just sound like people just banging on boards and sawing on pieces of wood compared to Arnold Schultz.
For the audience who are unaware, what specifically is lead guitar? Because we also have rhythm guitar, and there's different, I want to say, tiers. Could you break that down briefly, please?
Oh, sure thing, of course. Well, in a string band, you have to imagine there's the melody to the song, which in a string band setting is usually played by the fiddle. Now, the rhythm section, that's the section that does 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4 to hold the whole song together. And usually that's in a string band is held together by a guitar or a banjo or maybe a bass. And in a bluegrass band, for example, you have other instruments that play sort of halfway between rhythm and lead. So you have things like the mandolin or even the dobro, which is sort of a lap style guitar and they sort of play music that fits sort of halfway between rhythm and lead. And so a lot of what I'm talking about with Arnold Schultz is that in traditional string band music, most of the guitar playing, you have to imagine that a wood-bodied guitar, before you have amplification for that guitar, it only has so much sound, and that sound can only carry so far. So for many decades in the early 20th century, the guitar struggled to be a part of larger ensembles because it would get drowned out. So it led to the banjo being much more popular in popular music until the advent of the electric guitar in the 1930s. So you have to think of Arnold Schultz playing string band music with this guitar, and he's beginning to play the melody, which is usually reserved for the fiddle, but he's playing the melody on the guitar. I would have, listened to the jazz guitar of Charlie Christian, if people would be interested in hearing a really great electric guitar player that is very tuneful, as well as maybe Django Reinhardt, or I would even say Doc Watson if you want to hear something that's more string band related. But you have to imagine that in a community where there's a very set musical tradition, people are playing certain traditional songs that are well-rooted within the community. Arnold Schultz is bringing a whole other idea of how to play the music. And so to use the guitar as a lead instrument, it's a sound that people are completely unfamiliar with, and it is almost like Jimi Hendrix coming into the scene and just blowing people's minds with what he's doing with the guitar. But of course, we have to imagine this in a string band setting for Arnold Schultz. And so with the string band music, he's bringing a certain excitement and variety through his guitar playing that even as I spend more time thinking about his musical style, I can't help but think about people like Lonnie Johnson and Big Bill Brunzi, who had very similar musical trajectories and developments. They both started as fiddlers, and they both created very distinctive guitar styles that we still marvel at their tone, their quality, and how clean they play their music. And I just can't help but think that Arnold Schultz is bringing something along those lines.
Yeah, I would have to agree. So now, Arnold also comes from a musical family, right? So he grew up in music, correct?
That's correct. Actually, recently I did the talk for the Louisville Folk School, where I co-moderated a panel with Michael L. Jones, and we had two guests. So we had Dr. Richard Brown, who's a prominent mandolin player in the bluegrass scene, African-American mandolinist. And then we had a reporter from Owensboro, Kentucky, by the name of Keith Lawrence, who in the early 1980s did a article on Arnold Schultz, in which he interviewed several members of Schultz's family, as well as friends of Schultz. And he got to talking to, I believe it was a cousin of Arnold Schultz. And she mentioned that the Schultz family was a very big string band family. You know, they had, she called it hillbilly music. She said it was hillbilly music, and they played it hillbilly any type of way. So there was very much an idea that it was rooted within traditional string band music. And she mentioned that everybody in the family played, from Arnold's brothers to several women in the family as well, sisters and whatnot. And then Arnold, once he came of age, he began to travel up and down the Mississippi River. So he would go out as far as Chicago and New Orleans, and then he would come back with his guitar with some new music that he picked up along the way.
You know, actually, first, before I even get into what I was about to say, his family reminds me of the Ebony Hillbillies from Queens, New York.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now, here's interest. This is what's interesting to me, listening to this story. The banjo is a black instrument, and we have this black family that is at least one of the members instrumental in the shaping of a particular genre of music, that the foundational instrument is the banjo. How is it that bluegrass, which is the music that we're discussing, lacks African-American representation?
Well, you know, one of the things that I always like to remind people is that bluegrass, as a fully cohesive genre, was invented during times of strict segregation. So in a similar way to the way that rhythm and blues is always going to be synonymous as black music, bluegrass will always be synonymous as white music because of that fact alone. The conversation that we get into when we begin to learn stories about people like Arnold Schultz is that we begin to find those marketing terms. We begin to find those sort of social cues being pushed aside by stories that sort of just break the narrative as we know it and as we've been told. Again, one of the hardest parts of Arnold Schultz's story is, of course, he never made recordings. And, you know, everybody swore up and down in the county that he was such a great player that, you know, he would have been a hit on recordings if he had made them. But, of course, another part of the story that's so interesting is that he shunned the limelight. He did not want to make recordings, nor did he even want to take a picture. And so there's only two pictures that survive of Arnold Schultz currently at the moment. One of the pictures has only been rediscovered in the past couple of years. And Arnold Schultz apparently said that he just never wanted anybody to know about the devilment he got himself into. So he didn't want to have any pictures taken of him. So there's a part of the story of Arnold Schultz that I think even Arnold Schultz didn't really want us to know. But to speak about his musical influence, there are a couple of different things. In the talk, one of the things I tried to do was really get into some of the tangible details of what we know about Arnold Schultz's musical influences. What did he actually do to help bluegrass become bluegrass as we know it? And there seems to be two different conversations on the matter. There's an idea, one, that because Bill Monroe had mentioned that maybe a little bit of that blues got into the bluegrass music through Arnold Schultz, and that's sort of a colloquial way that he mentioned it. So there's an idea that literally a blues band style of music with string band music is a part of what Arnold Schultz brought to the musical mix. Bill Monroe picks up that idea and then begins to create a new form. You know, because one actual detail that folks should know is that Arnold Schultz was not a singer. That's one thing that they mentioned specifically in the article, is that he'd never was known to sing, but he was an excellent player. And so there's even a notion that, you know, because a lot of bluegrass music is built around the singing, and that could even be an innovation in of itself, is taking a African-American infused or blues scale or a bluesy style of way of playing and putting that sort of that old-time high lonesome sound, as they call it, on top of it. That's one aspect. The other part of it, which I've found to be interesting to think about, is in a time where we have to think of people like W.C. Handy and his writing the St. Louis Blues, and the idea of blues as a sort of a flavor that you could place on top of string music or any type of popular music. I think there's an aspect of ragtime that and sort of blues in the popular form being a part of bluegrass as well, that possibly could be a part of Arnold Schultz's legacy. And then there's the other idea, for me, kind of thinking regionally. I think about groups like the Louisville Jug Blowers and some of the very avant-garde-sounding harmonies that they are producing on their recordings that they make in the early 1920s. And I can't help but think about that with Arnold Schultz as well.
I would have to agree. You mentioned that during the panel, it was stated that a relative said that they played hillbilly music, which I want to get back to. But what I want to ask you in regards, as you being the American songster, I get a sense of Arnold Schultz being somewhat of a songster. Is that correct, or am I giving him the wrong title?
Well, you know, technically he'd be a musician if he didn't sing. So that's one thing, a songster sings as well as plays the music. And so he would technically be like a musician a musicianer, which is just someone who's an excellent player. And it was interesting even hearing Keith Lawrence talk a little bit about Arnold Schultz and the legacy, as well as what Dr. Brown was saying about what Bill Monroe had spoken to him about. It almost reminded me in a way of someone like Reverend Gary Davis, and I made a small comparison to the two guitar players in that way. Because Reverend Gary Davis, one of the things he did is, by the time of the folk revival, he really spent a lot of time teaching a lot of different younger players at how to do his style of Piedmont picking that he had picked up through his many years of busking and going through life as an evangelist. And I just couldn't help but think of Arnold Schultz in a similar way, where he just sort of was an open book in a certain way, where he just allowed people to sit at the foot of the master. And thankfully he did, because, you know, one step removed from him, we have a style of music that we still think about today as being a powerful American form, which is bluegrass. And to me, I think it just strengthens what I love about bluegrass music as a genre. I've always felt that even though it's string band music, there are certain aspects that seem connected to New Orleans jazz in terms of improvisation and sort of how a band can, you know, work with multiple instruments to create like polyphonic harmony, you know. And I've just always thought that there was something to that. And to, when I began to read more about Arnold Schultz, because again, there are only so many details about the man himself that we have to go off of at the moment. And so with that, you know, we can only just imagine at what type of music that they were playing, even though we don't have full details. The only song that we have that specifically references is the old pop number, "I'll See You in My Dreams." And apparently this extra A chord that Arnold taught everybody revolutionized the entire string band tradition, because it broke everybody away from one chord or three chord song, and so he brought them an extra chord.
Thank you, Dom Flemings. Be sure to listen to part two of my conversation with Dom about the significant contributions of Arnold Schultz to the origins of bluegrass. For WKU Public Radio and NPR One, I'm Lamont Jack Pearlie, and this is the African American Folklorist.